sometimes even deny the validity of right and wrong. This has happened because over a period of time, we've actually ignored the voice of our conscience. For example, if my mind keeps telling me something and my conscience keeps telling me something else, depending on the influences that surround me, the friends that I keep, the company that I have, if those influences are moving in contradiction to my conscience, even though my conscience is first speaking, in the first instance I'll say, no, this is wrong, I shouldn't be doing this. If the influence is powerful, it's strong, and it keeps coming, and then there comes a point where I say, well, maybe, so what if I do this? It won't really matter. And so I allow my mind to move off and to put through that thought into action, even though I know that it's contrary to what my conscience says. And if I do this, then the sound of the conscience keeps becoming softer, quieter, and it doesn't speak to me anymore. If you've got a friend and you've ignored their advice once, twice, three times, you're lucky if they stay your friend after that. Probably, if they do remain your friend, then they'll say, okay, but I'm not going to say anything more to this person. They don't listen to me anyway. And so my conscience stops speaking to me, and everything just becomes very blurred. And it even comes to the point where I deny that there is something which is right and something which is wrong. We get to a state of not just from morality coming to immorality, from the state in which there are morals, we then come to the state in which we don't follow those morals any longer, and we disobey the sound of our conscience. Now that's described as immorality. But then below that comes the state in which we have the world as we see it today, in which very often we feel that it's an amoral society, a world without morals, in which our conscience is no longer even actually speaking to us. It's in this situation that meditation becomes a very important ingredient, because in the experience of the link of the Self with the Supreme, the influence of God strengthens my conscience and clears my conscience, so that I'm actually now able to see clearly, understand clearly, discern clearly. But not only that, because I've been able to draw power from God within myself, my conscience is now strong enough to be able to guide me in the direction that I should be going, without allowing the influences of friends, of company, of society, and all these other factors to misguide me. So on the one side, I'm dealing with the workings of the conscience and putting that right, but on the other side, there's also a little bit of attention I need to give to the quality of my thinking, to the quality of my feelings and my emotions. A simple process is to be able to actually pause for a moment and see, what are my feelings? Are my feelings good feelings? And if I can constantly maintain that awareness of keeping good feelings within myself, both for myself, for others, for situations, then having good feelings means that I'm beginning to bring my mind back into a state of alignment with my conscience once again. When I come to that state of inner balance, of harmony within myself, so that my energies are now focused in one direction, then I find that it's a lot easier coming to a state of harmony with others also. Whilst there's conflict inside, it seems obvious that the result of this is going to be conflict in my relationships outside also, and lack of harmony therein. Where I haven't been able to come to balance within myself, it's very unlikely that you'll be able to satisfy me and do that which is right in my perception. And so harmony within, and there's a greater possibility that there'll be harmony with you and with others around me. One of the things that one has to let go in order to work towards harmony is the sense of ego. The question of self-awareness and the identity of the eternal self is another factor. But the question of ego, though it's the little I that becomes dominant, it's this one factor that causes a disturbance within what could be a situation of harmony. If I remember that I am a child of God, in that awareness there's the self-respect of who I am, but there's also a sense of humility. There's also respect for others around me, and an ability then to come together in harmony with others. Ego will push me in a very specific direction. Ego will say that I am the one that is right. Everybody else is not right. And as soon as I have this thought that I am the one who is right, of course then I'm negating the value of others and the opinion of others and the things that they are doing. This applies in terms of religion, in terms of nationality, in terms of my role in society, in terms of my family also. Letting go of ego would be impossible were it not for the power of spirituality and the link with the Supreme. In that relationship with the Supreme, not only do I have a different vision of myself, but I then truly am able to see the value of all others. This is why I come back to the analogy of the tree, because within all the different branches of the tree, I look down and I see that they all stem from one seed, and that is the Supreme. Within this analogy, we see God as the seed of humanity, as the creator, and the whole tree representing all the different branches of religions, of languages, of nationalities, and so on. Connection with the seed means that every branch then has life, and I'm able to see the beauty of every branch. I'm able to recognize the need for every branch within the tree. Imagine a tree with some of its branches chopped off. It's not as beautiful as it could be. But every branch connected with a seed, gaining life and strength, has then beauty within it, and I recognize its place within the whole scheme of the cosmos. Getting rid of ego is a factor that's very important in terms of harmony, because then, if I let go, then we can all come together. Let us spend a few moments in meditation together, so that firstly, on an inner level, on a subtle level, we generate harmony. I turn inwards. I come back to the awareness of my own inner energies. I allow my feelings to be filled with peace. I allow my conscience to be linked to God, so that God's light and God's might influences it. I come back
the being that I am, just a point of light, a child of God. I look around me and I see each and every individual as a child of God. Religion, color, caste don't exist in this dimension. All I can see are the eternal souls, children of the Supreme. Each one valuable and beautiful. I'm able to let go of the arrogance of the past, and with humility connect with all my family. There are different approaches to life, and we can look at the different results of those various approaches and see what it is we would like to have for the future, so that the world can be in a condition that we would like it to be in, and our own personal life can also be of the quality that we would like to have. There's one particular situation or approach in which one can say that it's a question of cooperation, and if there's the spirit of cooperation, I believe that we can work together and create a better world. However, at the present time, we seem to have moved very, very far away from the philosophy of cooperation. And what seems to be holding most strongly is the philosophy of competition. And we see competition existing within the home, within the family, where little children compete together. But we also see competition in terms of the marketplace, most definitely. But we also see competition in terms of education. The whole structure or system of education seems to be based on competition at the present time. And definitely, in terms of what's happening within the world, and nations together, again, rather than cooperation, it seems to be motivated by competition there, or even worse than that. In fact, from competition we seem to have come to a state where it's actually a situation of conflict. It applies again from the home through all the different levels of coming together in society, to the global situation, where now very definitely it's a spirit of conflict rather than cooperation. Our perception of the world changed very dramatically. Some years ago, when the first people went into outer space, then we saw those shots of planet Earth taken from outer space. We had a very beautiful vision, and the astronauts called the planet Earth the Blue Pearl, because it was here on this planet that they could see huge expanses of water, water in the fluid condition that we know it as. On some other planets, it exists, but in a frozen state, as ice, or on other planets, it exists in the state of vapor, because it's so hot there, that in a form of water, in which condition it's actually able to support human life. As far as we know, it's only planet Earth that actually has this particular condition. And so when the astronauts were looking at planet Earth from way out in space, they were seeing this very precious blue, very beautiful pearl. And it gave them a very different sense. It was a sense of awe and wonder, a recognition that from outer space you don't see any boundaries, you don't see any divisions. And our good fortune is that not only were they able to have a glimpse of this, and that dramatically changed their perception of the world, themselves, and their relationship with others, but those photographs have been available to us also. And I'm thinking of those photographs in which we see planet Earth from space, and you don't see any political boundaries, you don't see any divisions at all. You truly begin to see the one home that we all share as humanity. When we recognize that it's a global village, when we recognize that it's our home, then we also begin to see that our relationship with each other is of one family. After all, who lives together in the same home? It's members of one family. And so we're all members of the same global family sharing that one home. However, if we look at the situation that exists now, it seems that we don't recognize either our family or our home. And if we were to project into the future and think about what the end of the millennium holds and what the new millennium holds, it's actually a very big question mark. Will the planet, will human civilization, will the global family actually exist in the next millennium? At the rate that we're going, there's only one direction, and that is annihilation. Because we keep coming up into the state of conflict, not even competition. I can acknowledge that there can be a positive side of competition, in which one is able to be motivated towards achieving something higher and better. But in that state of competition, which then sharpens into the state of conflict, so that even a game of football in many countries in the world is now no longer just a game. When there's a major football match, then the police are out in the streets, because what they anticipate is that the competition is going to be so severe and so harsh and aggressive that it's actually going to come into the state of conflict. And that's not just their imagination, it's become a reality so often that now it's almost expected that a game is going to result in conflict. And so if in a situation which is only a game, no matter how important it may be, yet still it's only a game, if competition leads to conflict, where we see the same feelings of aggression arising in all sorts of other levels of life. And so, what does the next millennium hold? isn't a question of sitting back and waiting and just hoping for the best. But human beings have the power to choose. I think this is the incredible beauty and strength of human life, that we can actually look into the future, forecast our destiny, and work towards that destiny. We can actually create the future of our choice. It is in our hands to be able to do this. We don't have to leave it to the forces that are unseen around us. We don't have to leave it to a handful of people who are manipulating governments. We don't even have to leave it to God. Well, what is it that God wants? Surely, God wants nothing but the best for us. But if at this moment of time, this is what we choose also, then there's a very specific course of action that's required for this. If I alone say, I want to have a better world, or if you alone say, you want to have a better world, well, the forces of negativity are so strong, so enormous, that you alone and I alone can do nothing at all. But yet, if you and I come together and we cooperate, then it's not just one individual you and one individual me, but the two of us working together, and our energies actually multiply, and it can become 11 working together. And especially if between the two of us we bring God into the picture, that being of light, that form that's been remembered as the point, then it's not even just 1 and 1, 11, it's actually that God linking the two of us, it's 101. And so the power of cooperation allows our energies to work together in a very powerful way. But why is it that cooperation isn't happening, even though it seems very logical? If we want a better world, it requires many different talents. It can't be just the politicians, or just the scientists, or just the economists, or just the religious leaders. It has to be every single individual, and all talents and all skills coming together. Then there's a world that's created. But for all of these different skills and talents to unite requires a certain amount of flexibility and adjustability. There are many different examples that tell us how cooperation can bring success. But even in terms of my own physical body, my body teaches me many different lessons. If all the different senses and all the different organs didn't work together for the common good to support me, my life, what would be the condition? If even one part of this physical body did not cooperate and started to misfunction, dysfunction, or stop functioning, then there are great problems that arise. Human life is only possible because everything is working together in perfect coordination and cooperation. I look at the fingers of my hand. How many different tasks am I able to accomplish with one hand? Or even, how many more tasks am I able to accomplish with two hands? Things that are impossible with one, I can manage and make very possible with two. But even just let me go back to looking at one hand. Sometimes, because we see differences of roles, personality, talents and skills, these become obstacles, and so it's difficult for us to work together and cooperate together. But imagine if the son were to say, well, because all the fingers are not like me, I can't work with the other fingers, or if the little finger were to say the same thing, I'm not going to work with these others because they're not like me. You see, there's variety, there's a total difference, there's a different function. But the very reason that there is a difference and difference in function is that if coming together, we're able to achieve incredible things that so far most intricate machines and tools haven't been successful in. I know they're trying, but they still have to find a tool that's as delicate and as sensitive and as well coordinated as the human hand. And so just this hand is a very lovely lesson in terms of cooperation. But it requires a deep inner spiritual power to be able to cooperate with others. Cooperation should be totally natural, and yet because it requires spiritual power, it's gone very far away from our lives. And in order to come back again and return to the state of cooperation, so that truly we work together as one family and we create a better world for ourselves, we need to develop inner spiritual power. There's a very lovely Hindi word for cooperation, and it is the word sahyog. And it instantly indicates that spiritual power is needed, because it incorporates within this term the word yoga, the link with God, the union with God. As a result of focusing your mind in the awareness of God, making that inner spiritual link with God, I'm able to draw God's power within myself. And this power has nothing to do with influence and authority over others, but it's a very subtle inner power that first of all gives me the discipline and control that I need over my own mind, my own senses, over my own life. But beyond that, another aspect of this spiritual power is that it allows me to develop tolerance. If I can't tolerate something about your personality, how am I going to be able to work with you and cooperate with you? And not just to work with one or two individuals, but maybe to work with 5, maybe 50, maybe 500 individuals. Because the larger the task, the more unlimited the task, the more hands it requires. And to set the world right isn't a little task. It requires the cooperation of a vast, vast number. And so definitely, I need to be able to develop tolerance, so that I can take a step towards that goal of working together in cooperation. Tolerance comes through my link with the Supreme, in which my heart is able to open up and become generous and big. When my heart is narrow and tiny, it shrinks. Then I become very rigid, and it's not possible for me to tolerate the ups and downs and the ins and outs and the differences of personality. But a big and generous heart, and I can tolerate. To be able to work together with you, there's another very specific capacity I need to develop, and this also goes through the attainment of spiritual power. It's the ability to discern, to see clearly. Just like a jeweler has an eyeglass and is able to see the difference between a false stone and a real diamond, he has his little glass, and with that it becomes very easy. In the same way,
when there's clarity within the soul, then my eye of wisdom, my divine intellect is open through my connection with the Supreme. Then I'm able to discern, and in particular, the need for discernment arises because I need to be able to see the things that are valuable in you and ignore, or at least not be affected by the things that are negative in you, so that I'm able to pick out the beauty of the jewel that is within you without seeing the dust that surrounds the soul at the present time. Each and every single individual has wonderful qualities, qualities that are very particular and special to them, qualities that aren't in you or in me, but they are in that individual. And that speciality needs to be seen, appreciated, and even spoken of, so that then it can be encouraged to come into action. And what we're doing then is working with the speciality of that individual, and we're allowing that individual to cooperate with us and work together with us on the highest level possible. If I'm not able to discern the goodness, the unique speciality of that individual, I'm not going to be able to take their help, and there's going to be something very major missing from the task. And so lack of cooperation means lack of success, lack of being able to create a better world. And so the quality of discernment through my spiritual connection and development of power is very much what is required. Another factor that comes in terms of cooperation is the ability to be able to decide, to come to decisions, and hopefully decisions that are very precise and accurate. If I'm living for myself alone, whatever decisions I make are going to influence my future, my situation, but yet if I'm cooperating with a number of others, and if I have the responsibility of making decisions, then the decision of one impacts everybody else within the team, and my decisions are going to come back to me.